Good morning, everybody. Let's begin in chapter 13. I want to begin with pasuk 20. Avshalom achiha. Her brother Avshalom. This is after the terrible rape of Tamar. Vayomer eleha Avshalom achiha. Her brother Avshalom said to her, "Ha Aminon achicha hayayimach, was your brother Aminon with you?" Now I know a number of you asked the question twice. Why is there an extra yud here? His name is Amnon, not Aminon. So I did find one of them, a portion that says that in the grammatic forms in the Mishnah, a yud sort of makes something smaller. Now watch. Let's take, what do we call children? No, what do we do with their names? Bill is Billy, huh? Mick is Mickey. Yudi. What? Go ahead. Risky. Honey. Javi. Huh? Okay. But very often, the yud at the end, or the yud at some point over here, he inserts it, you know, Ami. What he's doing is he's turning him into something much smaller than he was. That's the meaning of the yud. He's not calling him by his real name, he's calling him a name. He has given him a nickname. That's the point of the yud. The yud represents a diminishing of the stature of Amnon. Ha Aminon achich, hayayimach, was Amnon your brother with you? V'yatanar achoti, hacharishi, remain silent, achich who he is your brother. Now, obviously he doesn't mean that you should have compassion upon him. What he really wants, as we said, is let's put a lid on all of this. Don't pay attention. Teshev Tamar, and you see the Vav over here is an interesting Vav. It should have really said Teshev Tamar Shomema. Tamar stayed with him desolate. I believe it's the Vav represents that there are stages. First, Teshev Shamar, just she came there. And when she finally settled into the house of Avshalom, she went into a state of being Shomema, bewildered. The trauma and the shock begins to set in. And she remains Beit Avshalom Achiha in the house of her brother Avshalom. The word Ach appears three times in this pasuk. In a sense to dramatize the tragedy. This is a tragedy in a family. A family has been torn apart. And the point also that I want to make is, doesn't necessarily have to mean that Amnon was a real brother of Tamar. Though, as I said, there are those who indeed say that he was a real brother, which means there should be punishment for this. Now, we're going to have to talk about the punishment. The punishment, assuming that she is a real sister and this is an act of incest, it is still not punishable by a court of law, by capital punishment. The punishment, according to Torah, is karet. Karet means that it is in the hands of God. There is no punishment that could be meted out by man. Even a Sanhedrin could not, because he hadn't been warned in advance. There were no witnesses to the deed, so that there's really nothing that anyone can do. Which, of course, is not terribly troubling to us, because we believe that justice and judgment in this world is not in the hands of man alone. There is Shofet Koharetz as well. There is a judge of the whole world. We don't have to carry the burden of justice all alone. There are things where man is capable, indeed, of bringing about justice, and then there are other areas where one simply has to wait. Rebbein Shalom, God in Himmel, this is in your hands. It is your responsibility. King David heard all of these things, and he was very, very angry. And as we pointed out, Vayichar Lo represents an inner anger. He is angry with himself. He is in pain. He should have thought about it. It should have occurred to him. Below Dibur Avshalom im Amnon l'mirabi atov, Avshalom did not speak with Amnon at all, from good to bad, from bad to good. Ki sonei Avshalom et Amnon, because Avshalom hated Amnon, al dvar asher ino et Tamar achato, because he had tortured his sister Tamar. And here, of course, we pointed out the idea that not speaking is infinitely worse than speaking and getting angry. If he would have been able to let out all of the anger against Amnon, there is always the possibility of reconciliation. In the event that no anger, and nobody speaks to him, David says nothing to him. We have no indication that David ever said anything to him. So David doesn't say anything to him. Avshalom doesn't say anything to him. It says, "Vayichal ma'al." Ba'amelech David shamar kol advarim ha'ele. David heard all of these things. Vayichal lo ma'al. You have to look in, you know. All right. Vayihil shnatayim yamim, and it came to pass 2 years later. Vayihu goes zimla Avshalom b'tal chatzor asherim Ephraim. They were shearing the sheep of Avshalom in Chatzor, which is near Ephraim. There are a number of places in Eretz Yisrael that are called Chatzor. For example, we have Chatzor HaGalili. Right? The Chatzor in the Galil is called Chatzor HaGalili in order to differentiate it from other Chatzors. This Chatzor, therefore, we're told that this Chatzor was in the area of Ephraim. Some say that it is an area just north of Ramallah, not far from Beit El, which is in the area of Ephraim. Vayikra Avshalom l'kol b'nei HaMelech, Avshalom called all of the sons of the king. Vayavor Avshalom al HaMelech, Avshalom came to the king. Vayomer, he said, "Hinei no gozesim la'avdecha." Behold, they are shearing for your servant, my sheep. Yelech no HaMelech v'avadov im avdecha. Let avdecha, let the king and his servants go with your servant. This was part of the humility before a king, that even the son does not refer to the king as Abba, or himself as a son, but as a servant. Vayomer HaMelech el Avshalom, the king said to Avshalom, "Al b'nei, al na melech kulanu, please, no, my son, please let us not all go. V'lo nichpad alecha, we shouldn't make things difficult for you. In other words, if all of us are going to come, then it's going to become a major operation. You're going to have to provide for everybody, place to sleep, place to eat. Vayifrotzbo, v'lo ova lo lechet, vayivarachelu." Vayifratzbo means that he importuned. It's the same as the word vayiftsar. The tzaddik and the reish can move around. It means to importune, to beg, to attempt to influence him. He didn't want to go. Vayivarachehu, and he blessed him. David blesses Avshalom. That really indicates that the conversation is over when he tells him, go in peace. That's an indication this conversation is over. You cannot raise the issue again. Vayomer Avshalom. So therefore Avshalom says, "Valo, since you are not going, Yelech Meitanu Amnon Achi, please let my brother Amnon go with me." Vayomer Lo HaMelech. So the king said to him, "Lama Yelech Imach, why should he go with you?" Why? The king also finds this as being strange. Obviously Avshalom is a very persuasive person. And here again, Vayifratzbo Avshalom, he importunes, he begs of him. Now, obviously what happened over here is the following. Avshalom doesn't want the king to go. He doesn't want David to be there. The only reason why he invites David is so that David should be off guard. If Avshalom has invited the king, then obviously he cannot have anything in mind that would be harmful to anybody. Now, it's a ploy. So now, and then there's another thing. You come with two requests, and one that is going to be rejected, it makes it difficult for the person to reject the other one. If you can't do that volo, since you couldn't do that, like, you're not going to refuse me a second time. Volo, let my brother go. So the king said, "Well, why? What do you need? Vayishlach itoet amnon, he sends with him Amnon and all of the sons of the king. It would seem, as one reads the pasuk, Avshalom had not asked for the princes, all of the rest of the family to go. This seems to be an act of David. It means already once Amnon is going, he doesn't want Amnon to go alone. What he wants, rather, in other words, here already it's the initiative of David. Let the rest go, and he assumes that obviously nothing is going to happen in the presence of the whole family. The whole mishpucha is there. Nothing can go wrong. Vayitzar Avshalom et Nahar Avleimor. Avshalom commanded his boys, meaning his servants, saying, you should see Ketov Leiv Amnon Bayayin. When Amnon's heart is going to be good with wine, Bo'amarti Aleichem, I will tell you, I'm going to give you the signal. Haku et Amnon, smite him, Ba'amitem Otvo, and kill him. Altiro, don't be afraid. Hallo, behold, Ki Onochi Tziviti Etchem. You know, the responsibility is mine. I will cover for you. Onochi Tziviti Etchem. Chizku, be strong, be Yul Bnei Chayil, and be soldiers, be tough. I'm going to take the responsibility upon myself. Obviously, Avshalom has tremendous leadership powers if he has people who are ready to kill for him. People who are ready to kill for him. We're going, huh? And not merely the king's other son. We're talking about the firstborn son, the one who is the heir apparent. He is telling them to kill the heir apparent. Avshalom has a powerful hold over people around him. Where else do kings sort of get into, or people get into trouble because they just had a little bit too much to drink? Achashverosh ketov leiv hamelech b'yayin. Ketov leiv hamelech b'yayin, when the king's heart is good with wine, he makes the terrible error of calling upon Vashti to present herself before everyone so that they should be able to admire her beauty. Earlier, when we were talking about Naval HaKarmeli, who's eating and drinking and drunk with merriment, and he doesn't know that David is after him. Huh? You know, it doesn't say the term Ketov Leiv. I think there are two kinds of drinking. Noah's drinking was in order that he should forget the tragedy that he lived through. Noah comes out into a world that has become a graveyard of humanity, and he is the survivor. Isn't there the awesome guilt of the survivor? Why did I remain alive? He has to dull the sense of pain. That's Lot is the same. Except over there, it was the daughters that gave him to drink. But they knew that he would drink. Because he's also looking out upon what he believes is an entire world that has been destroyed. That would drive a man to drink. Here we're not talking about somebody who's driven to drink. He's drinking in order to make merry. It's a different kind of drinking. Vayasu na'arei Avshalom la'amnon kasher tziva Avshalom. The boys of Avshalom did to Amnon as Avshalom commanded. Vayakumu kol b'nei ha'melech, all of the sons of the king. You know, the murder took place in the presence of the whole family. They immediately flee. They're frightened that Avshalom may want to kill all of them. You see, because first of all, by removing Amnon, he becomes now the heir apparent. Maybe he wants no one else who will stand in his way. So each one got on his pered, his mule, and he fled. This is the first place in Tanakh where the word pered appears. A pered is a mix of a donkey and it's a mule, a donkey and a female horse. But it seems that it was as big as a horse, and it was strong like a mule. Vayehi hema baderech, while they were on the road, v'hashmua ba'al David lemar, the news came to Shmuel, to David, saying, "Hikar Avshalom et kol b'nei ha'melech." You hear what kind of a report comes? That the entire family has been killed. Not a single one remained alive. The king arose, vayikrad begodav, he tore his garments, vayishkav arza, and he lay down on the ground, v'chol havadav nitzavim k'ruei begadim, and all of the servants are standing with their garments torn. I don't know how to describe the frightening tragedy that has befallen the family. Obviously, the question is, how did such news arrive at the house of David? It's obviously somebody who fled assumed, and the assumption that here is an attempt at destroying the entire house of David. And by the way, most probably this may have been, I don't want to use the word common practice, but it most probably had happened in many other royal houses around the world. It may very well have been so. Listen, Torah lists 12 kings that ruled over Edom, over Esau, before there was ever a king in Israel. And not one of them was the son of a previous king. If not one was the son of a previous king, obviously what we're talking about is assassinations, wiping out families. And it had happened once in Tanakh. Where did it happen in Tanakh? This is Chidon HaTanakh time. Before this, where did it happen that somebody wiped out the family and only one remained? Shaul's family, not all of them are yet destroyed, but they were not assassinated. I'm asking assassination. Shaul and his three sons are killed in battle. Assassination of an entire family. 70 children. And only one remains. Gidon's family. The family of Gidon. Avimelech does it. And you remember the story of Yotam, the only one who remains alive, and he goes out into the fields outside of Shechem, and he talks about all the trees in the forest wanted to appoint upon themselves a king, so they came to the Zayit, to the olive, and then they went to the Geffen, and they went to the Teinah, and each one said no, and then they came to the thorn, to the thistle, what he's really talking about is Avimelech, and ultimately what happens is Avimelech himself is destroyed, but there is a whole family that was wiped out and only one escapes. It is going to happen later on in history as well, when Ataliah, who is the daughter of Achav and Izebel, is going to wipe out the entire family of David, the entire family, and one little six-year-old, one baby really, is hidden in the Bet HaMikdash, that's Yehoash, who then when he's age 7 is brought before the people and appointed king, and Ataliah is killed. So this is after this, right? So I'm saying most probably within the surrounding countries, it was not uncommon. And if it's not uncommon, obviously as soon as this happened, people fled and they assumed, and assumptions become fact, and the fact is brought to David, and David accepts it. We heard about him before. Yonadav ben Shimachi David, he was the one who gave Amnon the great advice to make believe that he is sick and that he should ask of David that Tamar should come and serve him. And he said, let not my master say that all of the boys, the sons of the king, have been put to death. Ki Amnon levadome, Amnon alone has died. Ki alpi Avshalom haita suma. It was through the mouth of Avshalom, it was his order. Haita suma, he had placed that before him as a goal. Miyoma nota et Tamar achotah, from the day that he had tortured his sister Tamar.
He's saying this not from witnessing it, but from knowing.
Very good. Obviously, the man either is assuming that is what happened. He's assuming. Is what's being said here that he was involved in the plot? I cannot believe that he was involved in the plot. But he's the wiz. He's the wise man. He's the one that you come for advice to. That's Avshalom went. Amnon went to him for advice. Va'ato says, Ayosim Adonia Hamelech Elibo Dovar Lema. Let not the king place this upon his heart. Let him not. It's not that bad. Just one of your kids was killed. Yeah. Not Lema Kol Bnei Hamelech Metu. To say that all of the sons of the king have died. Ki im Amnon levado mate. Amnon alone is dead. Vayivrach Avshalom. And Avshalom fled. Vayisah ha-nahat sofet enov. Now watch these words. Watch the words Vayivrach Avshalom. Just remember those two words. Avshalom fled. Vayisah ha-nahat sofet enov. The boy who stood either on top of the palace, the lookout, the tsofet, the one who looked out, he lifts his eyes. This is a common term throughout Tanakh. Many people are coming from behind him along the mountain. Now, obviously, he's waiting to see what's going to happen, and in what direction is he looking? He expects them to come from one of two directions. They're either coming from the north. Remember, where did the murder take place? In Chatzor, 10 kilometers north of Ramallah, so they would be coming from the north. They might even come through the east to Yerushalayim, to Ir David. They would come the east. He did not expect them from the west or from the south. It seems that they came from the west and the south because either they fled in disarray, or maybe they were afraid that they would be pursued and followed. So anybody who would pursue them would go in the direction closest to Yerushalayim. The closest way is to come either north, from the north down south, straight to Yerushalayim, or through the east. So he looks and he sees them from the other side. Yonadav said to the king, Hinei b'nei ha-melech. Bow. Behold, the sons of the king have come. Kidvar avdecha kein haya. Four words. I think these four words tell us a great deal. Kidvar avdecha kein haya. As the word of your servant, that's what it is. In other words, he's telling the king, I'm right, I'm right. Exactly what I told you. There is obviously something that I would say a bit arrogant about this. You see, what bothers me in all of the words of Yonadav, Yonadav seems to be a know-it-all. Not only a know-it-all, we don't see much compassion. Not much compassion over here. You know, he's just giving in other facts, and the facts are not such. It cannot be so. Like it's not so terrible. Just only the heir apparent has been killed. You see, just in other words, one has to, while one may be absolutely right, one has to be careful not to say something like that, like I told you so, exactly as I told you so it was. We're just getting a little insight into this, into Yonadav. Yes. No. Eliav was the oldest one. Shammah was third or fourth. He's sometimes called Shim'a and sometimes Shammah. He's called by all similar. Vahi kichalotolo daber, he came to play pass kichalotolo daber when he finished speaking. Vihinei b'nei ha-melech bo. Sometimes you look through the first and you don't find anything. Well, why is it necessary to tell us vahi kichalotolo daber, he came to pass when he finished speaking? What would have been lost if it would simply have said, behold, the sons of the king came? Is it telling us that he spoke at length? Was he a bit lengthy and therefore they came? Or were they coming that quickly that soon after he finished speaking, they were there? Yes. No. You know where it says the last time by Yehika Chalotolo Daber? I know I'm taking a big chance saying this. I better find the puzzle first before I tell you that it's precisely as I said it is. So I found the pasuk. It's precisely as I said it, and it's exactly where I thought it was. Okay, strike that. David has come back from killing Goliath. And David has been brought before Shaul. Shaul says, who is this boy? And he's talking with him. Vayihi kichalotolo daber el Shaul, v'nefesh Yehonatan nikshira v'nefesh David. First pasuk in chapter 18 in Shmuel Aleph. When he finished speaking to Shaul, the soul of Yonatan became bound up with the soul of David, which seems to indicate that the two followed quickly from one another. Anyway, by Yisu Kolam, by Yifkud, they lifted their voices and they cried. Vegam Amelach Vechol Avodav Bachu Bichi Gadol Miyo, the king and all of the servants cried a great cry. We're talking about a tragedy. Tragedy has befallen the family. Avshalom Barach. Now, Avshalom fled. Now, weren't we told already that Avshalom fled? Which I was told us the Pasuk 34. But wait, we're not finished yet. It's going to say it another time. Very good. You're peeking. You're sneaking ahead. Avshalom Barach and Avshalom fled. Vayelech El Talmai Ben Amihud Melech Geshur, and he went to Talmai, the son of Amihud, king of Geshur. Talmai is his mother's father. He's going to his Zayda's house, king of Geshur. Vayit Abel Al Beno Kol Ha Yamin, and he mourned for his son. I see. What are you looking? Everybody's looking a little strange over here, right? Who's he? Who's he?
David, no.
Of course it's David. Vayit Abel al Beno. Very good, very good. I tell you, I see that it's exactly as I told you. I've made you see Psukim. And I don't believe that the Mepharshim don't really say anything here. I'll tell you what the Metzudas David says. Vayit Abel HaMelech Hit Abel Al Amnon Beno Kol Yimei Chayav. The king mourned for his son Amnon all the days of his life. That's quite a statement. The idea of the Metzudat David. Yeah, this is one of those psukim where I'm leaving. It's going to be a free for all for a few minutes, but I just want to see. I don't think that any one of them are Farshim. No, but everybody says that it was that he mourned for Amnon. The only problem, of course, is Amnon is not mentioned in the Pasuk. That's the problem. The problem, of course, is the only son that's mentioned in the Pasuk is Avshalom. There's a book, absolutely. But that mourning is going to come later on, after the death of Avshalom.
Even though Avshalom fled, he might
expect
him to come
back.
So I'm telling you, in all of the Mepharshim, I haven't found anything. But obviously it's a strange pasuk, yes.
Since David is mentioned really, couldn't it be that Tom, with Abel, and his grandson, who was committing murder?
That's what you said, That's what you said. I like it, except that I haven't seen anybody that says it.
Right.
But it's obviously strange. No, it's not only that it doesn't follow. The two subjects don't appear in the passage. The two subjects are David and Amnon, and neither one of them appears in the passage.
All the other names are mentioned. There's so many names
mentioned. And that the second half of the passage should be talking about the two names that are not mentioned. There's a problem. There's a problem. I've looked in all of the. I've looked and I don't find even the Malbim, I know what the Mepharshim feel. Obviously the Mepharshim feel that David and Amnon are the subjects of the entire story, the two leading people in the story. But this is the kind of thing that I'll leave it with you, like if you can try and think of something. Let's go further. Avshalom Barach Tzimdritmo, for the third time. And Avshalom fled by Yelech Geshur, and he went to Geshur. So now, not only are they repeating that he fled, but that he went to Geshur. By Yehisham Shalom Shanim, and he was there 3 years. So first of all, something that I've said often is a difference between the first fleeing of Avshalom, between one on the one hand, and two and three on the other. That's simple. That should be simple to you. You are students of the Jerusalem College for Adults. You should know. The first one is, of course, when he does it. Vayivrak Avshalom, because the verb comes before the noun. Vayivrak Avshalom, and Avshalom fled. Avshalom Barach, where you have the verb after the noun, it means an Avshalom had fled. It's a past perfect telling us something that had happened before. Now we have the problem with these two last ones. The Malbim says, and the Abravanel says, that each one tells us something else. What it's really describing is the process. There is an emotional process, something is happening. His fleeing becomes more intense. The first time he flees, he's fleeing to get away from the scene of the crime, to get away from David. The second one is telling us, to whom did he flee? The problem, of course, is the third. So the third time, it's going to tell us how long he was in the process of fleeing, but it tells something else. Pasuk 36 is telling us that he fled to Talmai ben Amichud Melech Geshur, which would leave the impression that he was not locked into the city of Geshur wherever the king went. Avshalom went with him, with the Saba. The next pasuk tells us that he's afraid that somebody is going to find him someplace, so he remains only in Geshur. He doesn't leave the city. For that matter, he may not even leave the palace. By Yisham Shalom Shalom, and he was there for 3 years. Fatechal Davar HaMelech, Latzeit, El Avshalom, Ki Nicham Al Amnon, Ki Meit. Difficult puzzle.
The other puzzle.
Huh?
If that refers to Amnon, it means that he mourned his son all his days, and he couldn't be comforted.
I knew you were going to say that. What does Fatechal Davar HaMelech? Fatechal Davar HaMelech. Huh? Alright, so for in other words, the first time around by Yitabel al Beno Kol Hayamin, he mourned for what? For what Amnon had done.
When he was alive.
Alright. Okay. And here it's Kinicham al Amnon. No, we're talking about the death of Amnon is something that he has gotten over the death of Amnon.
If it is that, he should have mentioned the time of the crime.
Yeah.
Because if he was so upset over Amnon,
you're right. That's what I like. The only thing is, even I am a bit frightened of saying a pshat unless I find it in one of the first, because. You know, I mean, yes, it's true that there are times at which I read my own things into a pasuk. We do have a right to do it, but there's something strange about this Bayit Abel, certainly when we have it now in comparison with the pasuk that we're just learning. But let's take a look at this pasuk, a closer look. Right, go ahead.
With Yaakov and Yosef, you get that thing that Yosef was dead, he refused to be comforted. You know, the same paradigm is used, that he mourned him.
Yes, he mourned him.
To be comforted.
Yes, go ahead. Well, yeah.
The possibility that Avshalom came back, hoping that he would be forgiven, and that's why he says it.
No, he doesn't come back. There's no, wait, that's going to come next chapter, not here yet. Let's take a closer look at this passage. Vatechal David HaMelech. David, most of the Mephoshim say that there's a word missing here. Vatechal Lev David HaMelech, or Vatechal Nefesh David HaMelech, the heart. Oh, huh?
He was no longer moving.
No, you know what they kala also means yearning and longing, the heart's gate ice, you would say in Yiddish. Kol Sonavshi in Tehillim, it says, Dovra Mel describes how his heart goes out for God. It represents great longing. Vatechal Dovra Melech. So there are two completely opposite pshatim here. One is that the heart of Dovra Melech goes out. Let's say to Avshalom that he should go out finally and make peace with Avshalom, because Nicham al Amnon ki meit, he had become reconciled already and about the death of Amnon. The Barbanel says a different pshat. Pshat, he says, Vatechal David HaMelech, that David HaMelech stopped going out after Avshalom. David HaMelech wanted to go out, and he wanted to punish Avshalom. He wanted to bring Avshalom back in order that he should stand up for punishment, because he felt that Avshalom had to be held responsible and liable for a terrible crime that he had committed. By the way, that would fit in with an idea that we had expressed a number of times and that appeared in the Malbim. Every time David has the opportunity of killing Shaul, and his men say, let's finish him off now, he is pursuing you, David always says, no, we cannot lift a hand against the Anointed One of God. And why? Malbim explains why. David wanted to make certain that nobody would do it to him. That one should know that the life of the king is inviolate. Nobody ever dare raise a hand against the king or an heir apparent. Otherwise, David understood that what would happen would be that his own life would be in danger, and it would turn into a banana republic like all of the others around. The Mashiach Hashem, has the Anointed One of God, is one that you dare not even think of raising a hand against him. It can therefore work two ways in our understanding of this pasuk. On the one hand, Avshalom is the one who killed the heir apparent. For that, Avshalom has to pay. Number two, Avshalom is now the heir apparent, and Amnon is already dead. What do you do now? Do you see the two ways at which you can look at it? If David is going to do to Avshalom, in a sense, what Avshalom did to Amnon, then we have a cycle of violence that you can't break out of. Catch 22, exactly. He's not married to Bathsheba yet. She doesn't have Shlomo yet. Nothing has happened. Not born yet. That's all going to happen later. So I don't remember whether we mentioned the Ma'acha, who is the mother of Avshalom, was the daughter of Talmai, and she was a Eshet Yifat Toa, a woman that David married in war. So therefore she had to go through, she did indeed go through a process of conversion, and Tamar and Avshalom were born from her. So in other words, his mechitin, his father-in-law, was a guy.
Is it a different devil when it comes to incest? It comes to marriage as well. I think you are allowed to marry an child of a woman who's taken in battle.
Yes. Yes. And that's why there is no real relationship between Amnon and Tamar. Right, let's go further. We have a, and I'm getting worried, the year is already half over and we have a lot to do. And here we have a very powerful perek. Vayeda David, Vayeda Yoav ben Tzruya ki lev ha-melech al-Avshalom. Yoav ben Tzruya knew that the heart of the king is upon Avshalom. And I believe in keeping with how I interpreted the pasuk before, there are two ways of looking at this pasuk. David may very well be yearning and longing for Avshalom. He wants Avshalom home. The other possibility is that the heart of the king is against Avshalom. He wants to punish Avshalom. Yoav wants to break the cycle. Vayishlach Yoav Tekoa. Yoav sent off to Tekoa. Vayikach misham isha chachoma. And he took from there a wise woman. Vayomer ilea. And he tells her the following. Hitabli na. Make believe that you are in mourning. The live she not big day avel. Now it's not only in your personality and your demeanor, but then also put on clothes of mourning, the autosuchi shaman, and don't anoint yourself with oil. Vayit ki isha ze yomim rabbi mitabelet al make. You should be like act like a woman who for many days now is mourning for her dead. Uvata la melech. You should come to the melech, to the king, v'di barat elov kadovar azeh, speak to him such and such. Vayosem Yoav et hadvanim b'fia. Yoav placed the words in her mouth. He's sending this woman off. Atomer ha'isha ha'tekoit el ha'melech. The isha ha'tekoit, the woman from Tekoa. And this Tekoa, according to the Farshim, is indeed the Tekoa that we know south of Beit Lechem. And Gemara says that in the area of Tekoa, they had many olive trees, and Shemen Zayit, people who are raised on Shemen Zayit have Chachma. Olive oil gives Chachma, wisdom. But people of Apel, she fell upon her face, Arza, Batishtaku, she prostrated herself, Batomer, and she said, Hoshia HaMelech, King, help me. Now, the Mefarshim over here are concerned about the two Batomers. Twice in this pasuk it says, and she said. And if it said already at the beginning that she said to the king, it doesn't have to say again, and she said. Many of the Farshim say, the Vatomer Ho'isha have to call it. The first one is talking when she comes to the gate of the palace, and she cries out, El HaMelech, I want to get to the king, let me in to the king. The second one is when she is indeed speaking before the king. I have a feeling there may be another way to interpret this. It's part of the act. Part of the act is, she begins to speak, but she can't say anything. She gets choked up, right? Wouldn't that indicate, like, either because of the terrible tzar in which she finds herself, or the fact that she finds herself before the king himself, and she forgot her line there. She wants to talk, but she can't talk. And finally, when she does talk, she's able to say nothing more than, Hoshia Melech, save me, help me, king. Vayomalach Melech, so the king said to him, Malach, what's wrong? Who else says that? Malach Esther Amalka, Umavak Ashatech. Malach is sort of, I get the feeling that Malach is, when one is overwhelmed, just as Ahasuerus is, Esther has taken her life into her hands. She has come to the king without being invited. And here are people ready to kill her. And at the last moment, he stretches out his scepter, and she's permitted in, but he knows that she was just a step away from death, which means, therefore, she must have something terribly important to say. So all he can say is, Ahasuerus says to him, Malach, what's wrong with you? You know, it's obvious that she's coming for something terribly important. There's something that's bothering her. Vayomar HaMelech Malach. Vatami, she said, Aval Isha Mona Ani Vayomar Ishi, I'm a woman. I'm a woman who is a widow. Vayomot Ishi, my husband has died. All right. So of course, you know already what I'm going to ask. Isn't there something redundant about this? So obviously, one way to get over the redundancy is, yeah, we assume that she's a troubled woman, so not all the words have to come out correct. It's more than that. I'm a widow, and I feel as though my husband died now. I've been a widow for a long time, but I haven't lost the pain. It's as real to me as this is the moment of Ayamot Ishi. She is therefore able to transmit to the king the depth of her pain. Your maidservant has two sons, and the two of them fought out in the field. There was nobody between them who was able to save them. One smote the other and he killed him. I now remain with one son, and I have two sons and I have one. I have no husband. The whole family has arisen. Al shifchatecha, against your maidservant. They said, Tniat makachet, give us the one who smote his brother. And we're going to put him to death, for the soul of his brother will be killed. The nashmida kamata yoresh. We will destroy also this one, who is the one to inherit you, the last one left. The kibbutz kachalti asheni shara. What they're going to do is they're going to extinguish the coal, the little coal of life, the little light that's still left in my family. That which remains, they're going to extinguish that too. Levilti sim leishi shame usheidet al pnei adamah, so that there should not be for my husband a name or a remnant upon the face of this earth. When I read the pasuk, I get the feeling that maybe this pasuk is telling us that what does David really have in mind? Remember, to kill Avshalom. Those were the two approaches that I told you at the end of the last paragraph. Does his heart go out for yearning for Avshalom, or does his heart want to end Avshalom? What are the motives of the people who want to kill the remaining son? Huh?
Revenge.
Go ahead. Huh? Justice.
Dynasty,
justice, revenge, dynasty. Go ahead. Some Ashtemals, some Svetemals, some Dritmals.
And maybe they want to inherit.
Money, maybe.
They want to inherit. Because remember how she quotes them. She quotes them, V'nashmita gamata yoresh, we will destroy also the heir. If you destroy the heir, then who stands to gain? Then they stand to gain, because then they're going to be the heirs. What it means is, she's saying that their motives are suspect.
So the king said to the woman, go home by me, I will command about you. I'm going to give orders that nobody should touch a hair on your son's head. The woman of the Tekoa said to the king, she's not ready to let him, in a sense, brush her off with, okay, I'll take care of it. Nothing to worry about, I'll take care of it, that's not enough. She wants to elicit from the king a response that's going to talk of action, immediate action. So she says to the king, upon me, my master the king, will be the sin, and upon my father's house, the king and his throne will be innocent. What she's really telling him is, there is a form of speech which is, you don't want to talk about the other, so you talk about yourself. What she really is saying is, upon you, O king, will fall this guilt, because I've warned you, I've told you about it. If steps are not going to be taken to make certain that the other son is not put to death, then it's going to be upon you. Where else do we have this kind of talk? By when Paro, at the beginning of Shemot, he says, Hovon et chatmolo, let's deal wisely with these Jews. Pen yirbe, lest he's going to grow great, v'hoyoki tikreno milchoma, and it will come to pass when there will be war, v'ola min ha'aretz, he will leave the land. Says Rashi, no, he doesn't mean that Jews are going to leave Mitzrayim. They're going to throw us out, and we're going to be thrown out of Mitzrayim. But one doesn't want to say, al tiftach pel asot, and you don't open up your mouth and say that, just as she here doesn't want to say, it's on your head, okay. She has to speak with a certain degree of humility and respect before the king. So she says, alay adoni amelech ha'avon val beit avi. Ha'yomer amelech. So the king said, ha'medaber elayef, whoever speaks to you and says that they want to bring harm upon your son, v'havveto elai, bring him to me. V'lo Yosef od lo gad boch, and he will no longer touch you. Don't worry. I'm going to make certain. You just tell them the king wants to see them. Atonah says, she said, Yizkarno ha'melech et Hashem alukecha, may harbad go'el hadam l'shachet, v'lo yashmidu et b'nei. Says the woman, remember, O king, et Hashem alukecha, God your God. May her bat goel adam l'shachet. Targum Yonatan here, very beautiful. Rashi brings the Targum Yonatan, some of the other Mefarshim. What she is she's reminding him a halacha. In Torah it says that you have to have cities of refuge in the event that somebody is killed unintentionally. You have to have cities of refuge so that the one who is killed unintentionally should be able to flee to the city of refuge. And lo yar belo haderech, it shouldn't be a long journey. If the journey is going to be too long, during that long journey, the goel adam, the avenger, may very well kill him. For that, the halacha is very clear. It's a beautiful, beautiful halacha. The halacha says that miklot hayakatov al parashat drachim. Rashi brings it in Chumash. At every crossroad, at the time of the Beit HaMikdash, when there were cities of refuge where a person should flee to in the event that he had killed unintentionally, every road leading to the Ir Miklat, there had to be a sign with an arrow to an Ir Miklat. The Halach Torah did not want that the person who flees to the city of refuge should have to stop someplace during the course of his flight. How do I get to the closest Ir Miklat? Shouldn't have to ask. He should know precisely how to flee there, directly how to go. Miklot hayakatuf, written on every crossroad, was the direction to the Ir Miklot. Because Torah wanted to make certain that the Goel Hadam, the avenger, who in fact has a right to kill, ki yecham levavo, because his heart is hot with the anger of what has taken place, and if he kills then he is held blameless, he's not guilty. But the Torah wanted to make sure that the killer, the one who was killed unintentionally, should be able to flee quickly so that there should be no added loss of life. So she is telling him, listen, God, your God is the one that wanted to make certain that there should not be great loss of life. So he doesn't want that my son should be destroyed. You have to make certain that he's not going to be killed. Now there's something else. I have quoted the pasuk that says that the goel hadam, the avenger, has a right to kill ki yechem levavo, because his heart is burning with revenge. But we pointed out she had already left with the impression that it's not with revenge that they are burning, but they are burning with a desire for the inheritance, the inheritance. Vayomer, now the king finally responds by saying, Chai Hashem, I swear to God, if you told me Sarod Benech Arzah, that not a hair of your son's head will fall to the ground. Now we are already talking. The king has not simply said, don't worry. What was the first thing he said? L'chila beitech, go home, v'ani'at saveh, olayah, and I will give orders about you. The second time he said, listen, if anybody starts out with you, you just bring him to me, and I'll take care of him. Neither one of these two was sufficient for her. What she wanted was what she gets now. He swears that it becomes his responsibility. Now, Tamar Isha, T'daber no shifchadcha el Adoni HaMelo Davar, let your made certain, please speak to my master the king a word, Vayomer, and he said, Dabedi, speak. Incidentally, it sounds very much like Avraham speaking to God about the people of stone. Like, she doesn't give up. I mean, this woman has a tremendous amount of resilience. She is not going to finish with the king until she has said her piece. Why she says now, let me speak? Why does she ask permission, in a sense, to speak? Because her problem has been resolved. Her problem is resolved. The only thing is, she now has to connect all of this to the king. Now, really, if not for her own hidden agenda or Yoav's agenda, the audience is over. The king has sworn by God. Which means, of course, that the king is going to protect that son. Tamar Isha. So the woman says, now she finally brings the threads together. Why did you think such about the people of God? Umidaber hamelech hadavar hazeh ka'ashem levilti hashir hamelech et nidcho. From the way the king has been speaking, it is as though Avshalom is guilty and remains guilty. And what really has happened is levilti hashir hamelech el nid. At Nidcho, the king has not brought back Nidcho, the one whom he banished, or the one who is gone. There's really, what she's going to be telling you now is there's really no difference between Avshalom and my son, my remaining son, the one who killed his brother. My remaining son is the one whom you just now have sworn that you are going to protect. You should do the same thing with Avshalom. Kimot namot, because listen, she says, the end is, what's going to happen with all of us? We're all going to die. The chamayim hanigodim haratzo, we are like water that rolls down to the ground, always going down. What we have to do is find within ourselves the ability to forgive. We are like waters, ashalo ye yosefu, that will never be gathered together. Velo yisa Elohim nefesh, will not God forgive a man's soul? The choshav machshavot, and God is the one who always thinks of ways, levilti yidach mimenu nidach, that nobody should ever be cast away. On the contrary, the Revelation looks for ways and means to bring back even the nidachim. Uvo ha'ovdim be'eretz ashur, v'hanidachim be'eretz mitzrayim. She's pleading with him on behalf of Avshalom. V'ata asher bati l'daber al ha'malach adoni et hador hazeh. Now that I have come to speak these words to my master the king, ki yiruni ha'am, because the people are afraid of what is going to happen. Your maidservant said, let me speak to the king. In other words, everybody's afraid to talk to you about it. So I thought, no, so I will talk to you. Maybe the king will do the words of his maidservant. Ki yishma ha'melech, just as the king heard, lahatzilat amatomi kachoish, lahashmid otivet bini yachad, minachalat alukim, just like the king listened to me to save me from the hands of the man who wants to destroy me and my son together from the inheritance of God, from life. Atomish shifchadcha, and your maidservant said, yin adivar adoni amelech leminucha, let the words of the king that were for me menucha, you gave me peace. Ki kemalach alukim, like an angel of God, Kein Adoni HaMelech, Lishmoa HaTov V'Hara, my master, the king, is like an angel of God who hears good and evil and knows how to decide. Let God your God be with you. Just another few psukim. The king answered and he said to the woman, Al not chachadim imeni davar, do not withhold from me a single word. Asher anochi shoel otach, that which I ask you. Atomer Isha, the woman said, Yitabenu Adoni Amelech, let my master the king speak. Yitabenu Amelech, Hayad Yoav Yitach b'chol zot, has the hand of Yoav been with you in all of this? Atan v'isha, Atomer, and the woman answered and she said, Chei nafshecha Adoni Amelech, I swear by your life, my master the king, Im ish leheimin ulhasmil, I cannot turn to the right, not to the left, no way to turn. Mikol Hashed diber Adoni Amelech, everything that my master has said, you're right. Ki avdecha Yoav, hu tzivani, your servant Yoav is the one who commanded me. For who summed the peace shifchatcha et kalat bar va'ila, and he placed in the mouth of your maidservant all of these words. And he did it for good reason, lebavur sabed et pnei adavar, in order to turn things in such a way. Also avdecha Yoav et adavar hazeh, your servant Yoav has done this. Adoni chocham ke chochmat malach olakim, my master is wise, like the wisdom of an angel of God. Ladat et kol asher baretz, to know everything in the land. You knew, you figured it out. Vayomer ha-melech el-Yoav, tum ha-psukim. The king said to Yoav, Hinein asiti et hador hazeh, behold, I have done this. V'lei choshev et hanar et Avshalom, go bring the boy Avshalom. Now some of the Farshim say that the king was able to say this immediately to Yoav because Yoav was standing there in the presence of the woman. He was also there, poker-faced, obviously. What, me? So the king immediately tells Yoav to do it. Va'yipal Yoav al panavarzo, va'yishtachu, va'yivarech et hamelech. Yoav fell to the ground and he prostrated himself and he blessed the king. Va'yomer Yoav, Hayom yada avdecha, today your servant knows ki matzati chein ve'inecha adoni hamelech, that I found favor in the eyes of my master the king. Asher osa hamelech et dvar avdecha, the king has done the word of your servant, you listen to me. Va'yakom Yoav, va'yelev gishura, va'yavi et avshalom Yerushalayim. Yoav got up and he went. And he brought Avshalom from Yerushalayim. I'm sorry, one more pasuk. Vayomer HaMelech, Yisov el Beito, Ufanai lo yideh. Let him turn to his house, but my face he shall not see. Here, of course, is another indication that David has not made peace with Avshalom. Yes, he can be in Yerushalayim, but I don't want him to present himself before me. Vayisov Avshalom el Beito, Upnei HaMelech lo ra'ah. Avshalom went to his house and he didn't see the king. This is, of course, all going to set the stage. The next psukim already begin the stage for the next tragedy. Look what has happened here. There is the child who has died. Amnon has been killed. Tamar has been violated. And the relationship with Avshalom, in other words, what has really begun now is everything that Natan had said, that cherev lo yasser, that there will no sword will not be removed from your house, the terrible, terrible suffering that befalls him because of the sin of Bathsheba. Okay.